And thank you for joining us for a brand new podcast series from IFR Refresher. IFR Refresher is a monthly publication written for instrument pilots who care passionately about staying proficient.
We're speaking today with John Fiskus of the Flight Academy in Kirkland, Washington. John, let's get in a little free plug for the Flight Academy. Tell us a little bit about the flight school.
Well, the Flight Academy specializes in serious aircraft training. We teach transition training, instrument ratings, private licenses. We organize guided tours. We do pinch hitter courses, all kinds of things related to flying Cirrus. We've been in business for about 6 years, and we've expanded to include bases at Seattle, Las Vegas, and Indianapolis. And Vegas and Indianapolis are also homes to our full-motion Cirrus simulators, which we can use to perform more in-depth immersive training, emergency training, and instrument training.
Okay, and I'll give the URL here. It's www.flightacademy.com, correct?
TheFlightAcademy.com.
TheFlightAcademy.com. Okay, we got the plug out of the way. Since you specialize in Cirrus training, you've been involved in glass panels probably just about since day one. Let's talk a little bit about partial panel considerations for glass. But first, when we talked earlier, you told me you've had a couple of EFIS failures in actual IMC. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. The failures I experienced both occurred when the technology was still fairly new. They are getting more rare, that's the good news, but they could still happen at any time. The one was determined to have been a connection issue. The other one was a hardware failure as far as causes go. But in both instances, we shut the autopilot off, maintained whatever it was we were doing. We would then continue and advise the controller, you know, we have this problem. What we want to do now is go direct to a fix so that we could turn our autopilot on and brief a GPS approach, which is the only thing that we could now do. We advised the controller of all of this so they knew what we needed from them. They were always very, very willing to give us something right away that would get us going in a good direction, turn the autopilot on, pick out the approach, brief it, ask for direct to whatever initial approach fix we thought would work the best. And then the controllers would always clear us for that. The autopilot flew the whole thing. Each time we broke out well above the MDA.
Both of those occurred in actual IMC?
Both of those did. I've had several VMC failures, but it's honestly a total non-event. The airplane is easy to fly in VFR conditions with the backup gauges.
Okay, so we know to expect failures in glass panel airplanes. Less now than the early days of glass panel. That's a given. What's the best way to train for this sort of thing?
The best way to do it is just to practice. That's something that is a good cure for anything. A lot of people are under the misapprehension that it takes a lot more training than it really does. If a person were to just do maybe a half an hour of partial panel flying once every month, it makes all the difference in the world. I've seen that personally. It makes all the difference between somebody being very calm, collected, and good at it versus, you know, the thing's going to go into pieces quickly. A safety pilot or instructor on board, 15 minutes of hand flying and then shooting an approach on the autopilot partial panel, pretty much flake all the rust off for permanence for the pilot.
And how do you simulate the partial panel with the Avidyne systems?
There's two ways you can do it. One is to dim the screen down. Another one is to actually pull the circuit breakers on the system. Dimming the screen works well for hand flying because it's recoverable easily enough. If you actually pull the circuit breakers, you have to land and reset the system. The issue between the two is that if you're going to use the autopilot on the Avidyne system, the autopilot actually acts differently if the Avidyne is actually failed versus just dimmed down. And for total realism, pulling the circuit breakers will give you that, so the autopilot will react efficiently. The most important thing is do this with somebody that actually knows the differences, you know, one way or the other.
Now, we've been told that some operators are reluctant to pull the breakers, but is there any issue with doing that other than having to land to reset the system?
Other than that, no. It's just like shutting your system down.
John, we've flown all of the new singles equipped with glass panels, and each one has the backup instruments in a different place on the panel. Does this matter much? For example, in the Mooney, they're on the far right side of the panel. Are pilots able to accommodate the various positions of these instruments?
It does make a difference. The closer they are to the normal line of sight for the pilot, the better. And if the pilot doesn't have to turn his head one way or the other, that makes a better difference. A spatial disorientation is more likely if a person's head is to the side while they're maneuvering.
John, we've flown all the new singles equipped with glass panels, and each one has the backup instruments in a different place on the panel. Do you think this matters much? For example, in the Mooney, they're on the far right side of the panel.
Yes, I think it does matter. I think that if the instruments can at least be in a place that is directly in front of the pilot, it'll make a difference. We encounter problems when the pilot actually has to turn his head to view them. That will contribute to more spatial disorientation likelihood.
What's the most difficult aspect of partial panel in glass airplanes, do you think?
I think that it's recognizing that it's happened and realizing what needs to occur next. A lot of people don't practice this, and as a result, they're not aware of where to put their garments, how their autopilot's going to work, and just shifting their scan. It's essentially the same sort of reaction issues that we see when we practice emergency scenarios. People aren't expecting them, and they sneak up on them.
You mentioned something there about where to put the garments. By that, I assume you're talking about how to configure the 430s in a special way for partial panel. How do you do that?
Right. There's depending on the equipment, one of the screens will change as far as the page goes. But we generally recommend nav page 1 of the Garmin 430 so that a person can have a CDI. And then further to the right in the nav group, there's another sort of almost pseudo compass card, and we have people use that. It's actually track, but it's pretty close to heading in most cases that corrects for wind. But we have people set those up. It's third from the last on the third from the right, that is. But if people have traffic or weather or TAWS, that'll change the exact position of it. And that's why it's important for people to know specifically in their aircraft where these things are so they can go to them right away without any delays.
Now, I believe the Cirrus airplanes largely have the S-Tech autopilot. How does that behave in partial panel?
That's true. It behaves just fine so long as a person uses it in the appropriate modes. The autopilot will bypass the PFD when flying in GPS steering mode, and that's why I referenced, like in my situations, that we asked for direct to affix. With that for course guidance, we're then able to utilize the autopilot fully. Also with the PFD, there's slight differences in the altitude, capture and vertical speed modes. You can only do one or the other, but not both simultaneously. That often will throw people off because it's a functionality they never use if the PFD is working. That's why it's important to practice it.
In your experience, how readily are pilots able to adapt to the instantaneous need to go back to steam gauges? Do they have trouble with it, or are they able to make the transition pretty effectively?
I actually see it all across the board, and it's really the primary difference is whether or not a person practices it with some frequency, or if it's been 12 months or the last time they saw me, even since they've done this. That's usually the biggest factor. It's just rust.
Last question. Do you ever have occasion to go back to steam gauges entirely? And if you do, how difficult is that to do?
I do. There are a few Cirrus aircraft out there with six pack, and as far as I'm concerned, it's pretty easy, but I'm not a fair reference. I've got about 7,000 hours, and I learned on steam gauges. I do find it takes just a little bit of time to reacquaint myself, and I do notice that I'm a fair bit more tired afterwards, but I think that's mostly because the six-pack scan is more labor-intensive.
I see. Well, thanks very much for talking with us today, John.
You bet. Thank you.
And that was Paul Bertarelli speaking with John Fiscus of the Flight Academy in Kirkland, Washington, specializing in Cirrus training. IFR Refresher is packed with strategies and tactics from some of the nation's top CFIIs, airline captains, and corporate pilots who fly the system every day and really know what makes it tick. We suggest you pick up a subscription. You can do that online at www.ifr-refresher.com.